Hey, it's the steering committee. We're still in LA, day three. Kind of fun today. We're here at LA Dismantler with Sarah DeCarmen, and I'm pronouncing that right. I did my homework.
Okay, all right. The car woman.
Yes, you know? I love that. I mean, I love that you have. I want to set the scene here a little bit. So, what part of town is this? This is Sun Valley, LA.
I call it just north of Burbank.
Okay.
About 20 minutes north of, well, not 20 minutes. I can't say that because it's LA traffic. Maybe 20 miles north of downtown LA.
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of an industrial area. Yes. A lot of Dismantlers, right? But you're the only Porsche dismantler, right?
So I am. Yes.
What is
every other make is probably already on the street.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean exactly? Dismantler. You take cars that were in accidents that were written off. You part them out, and you are what, the biggest supplier in the world, pretty much doing what you do. Is that fair to say?
Or I'll say is a fancy word for junkyard.
Yeah.
You know, when you
get into
the...
It's all about branding.
Yeah,
you got to brand it right.
You know,
yeah.
The garbage man is not... He's like, you know, forgot the fancy word for that anyways.
Yeah. Sanitation. Sanitation specialist.
Yeah, that's engineer.
So, yes, it's basically, in a nutshell, a Porsche junkyard. But, yes, it's we dismantle the Porsches.
Yeah.
You can also call it a salvage yard. You can call it... there's... In other countries, there are other words for it, but that's all the... You know, the nuts and bolts
of
it.
Yeah. They call you the Porsche Queen, I hear, right?
That is one of my nicknames.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was telling Sarah before, when we first got in there, 2 days ago, when we arrived into town, we saw you leading a pack of Porsches, you know, which is kind of cool. We saw your sticker on the back of the Cayenne. And what are the chances? This big city, right? We would have seen you.
True.
We thought about stopping me at the stoplight, and then we thought that might be a little weird. Maybe
we were stalking
you or something. But so we're sitting in your office. We're looking over outside a whole room here of Porsches. Everything from, I mean, you go back to the beginning and then up to
not
current?
Not quite the beginning.
Okay.
I try to focus on mid-70s, late-70s, all the way up to current. So I have a 2020 downstairs
in
that 92.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't cover all the spans. I don't cover all of the different models. We pretty much stick to 911 Boxster and Cayman.
Okay.
I consider those more of... You know, in a sense, the purest cars.
Absolutely.
Not that there isn't a lot of love for all the others, but you can only fit so much in a yard.
Right.
LA real estate is at a premium, I'm very specific about how much I can stuff into this place.
I can only imagine. So how'd you get into the business?
So I met my late husband when I was 20, and he was already a Porsche nut. Porsche enthusiast is not even the word. It's aficionado, really, because he was just embedded. He got into it because... He had bought a chocolate brown from his brother, 911,
nice.
And I believe he had taken it to shops, and eventually I think he blew the engine, and then, you know, it's like, what do? You know, do I go to a Bundle Ross shop, and they're going to quote you a certain price, and well, as a 16-year-old, that's a little hard to swallow, so he was already in the salvage industry for Honda and Acura, and he got the idea, so let me buy another 911 and take the engine out and, you know, sell off the parts.
Yeah.
So it was really just... started from that. And so that was several years before I met him. And then he was kind of doing it as, I want to say, a side gig in his family's business. And then as we, you know, kind of went along in our dating spectrum, eventually, you know, he was, as families go, there can be tension. And so he was ready kind of to move apart from his family.
Sure.
And I said, let's make this Porsche thing, you know, something. I don't remember the words that we said, but that was kind of the gist. And, you know, you start small within their business and then eventually got our own place. And then you just keep growing, expanding. That was 20-something years ago.
Yeah, and I'm sure things have really changed just as far as the market. What maybe was a something they totaled a car out for 20 years ago, they'd probably try to fix, or maybe the opposite. I mean, the cars have changed.
Yeah.
Things have gotten so expensive.
Yeah, I mean, everything's relative. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask about that. I mean, so I can even remember even 7 years ago, some of the late, you know, late 70s, early 80s air-cooled 911s were really inexpensive, and now they're, you know, they went from 19 to now 40, 60, you know, $70,000. Does that change anything for you? Is it harder to find? I suppose if a car is really totaled out, there's no one can save it, but like, are people willing to fix a car that they wouldn't have been willing to fix
before? Yeah, has the bar been raised, right?
So there's a lot of layers in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're an insurance company, you have a certain percentage of the car that, you know, once you're going to total it, you're going to total it. So if you wrap that into, I'm trying to like get all of that in a nutshell. If you wrap that into what the value is of the car, and the car, let's say, was a $20,000 car then, and now because of our current market, which has really expanded, let's say it's a $30,000 car, I'll just make up numbers. That percentage has now changed. So the amount of damage that you would have had on a car that was worth less is going to be different than, you know, so there's a lot of different kind of factors at play. But then pricing of parts somewhat goes along with that. Not always exactly in it's really just a supply and demand market when you get into this sector. Mm-hmm. So we try to price everything, I call it at market value. Mm-hmm. You know, what the factory sold it for at one point is not necessarily a determination of what it's worth today, mm-hmm. depending on how vintage it is or how current it is. Mm-hmm. The availability of those parts. So if you get into, if it's no longer available in LA, you know, you can, the market can put whatever price they want on it, because yeah. it doesn't matter what it originally cost. If it was a $2 part, now it could be a $500 part because mm-hmm. everyone needs it. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if you get into the really specific parts that are not made. Mm-hmm. Porsche Classic makes some parts, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, then, it's everything is all just kind of relative, and it's just, it really shifts depending on the flow. And right now, getting chassis, I mean, I have so much demand for chassis, so much demand for engines.
Oh, really?
And it's almost like this post-COVID, you know, kind of wave of people really wanting to do projects on their cars is still continuing. Yeah. You know, I kind of thought maybe after people went back to work, it would slow down a little bit, but
It's a strange place for me walking in. I have such an emotional component with these cars, right? I mean, and it's really Porsche sells these cars on that emotion, right? So when you come in here, it's a Porsche graveyard, right? And I'm like, and not just a but also sort of a cannibalism sort of.
Heaven for others.
So, I mean, did you ever have that emotional component, or is this really a commodity for you? You're probably way past that, right? I mean, you still obviously enjoy to drive and all that. You've gotten past, this is a car, right? I mean, it's to have fun with, and that's sort of the end of it, I assume.
Well, I would say there's two different perspectives when you walk in. You walk in and literally I've had people practically in tears looking at these cars because they, they're, you know, you can see that they have, there's been a lot of things removed even after the accident has happened. Mm-hmm. And obviously there it was, you know, there's a component to how that accident happened and what happened to the driver. And like you said, I can't wrap myself into that. And I had to really divide myself a long time ago because every time a car comes in, if I'm going to sit and worry and I mean, I've literally seen, you know, the hazmat team has been in there. I've seen things that I probably wouldn't want to repeat, you know. Yeah. Most of it is always cleaned up.
Okay.
But, and lately we've actually been buying a lot more cars that still have, you know, good engine running. Sure. So I haven't seen as much of that.
Yeah.
But
I didn't even think about that aspect, that emotional aspect. You know, I was just thinking, you know, a car is something you love or whatever, but didn't really think about that. What's the strangest thing you've ever found in one of these cars?
Oh, you don't want to know. That's a box like your secret box over here.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, no. Something similar.
Yeah, we've had gentlemen that are very adamant about coming in back, getting their belongings after the car has gotten here if they've chased it down.
It's, a lot of secrets in that front.
Well, there's like attachment to certain things. Oh. Sometimes they're you know, stripped through before we even get them. And, you know, whether it's a tow company or a body shop or, you know, at the yards where we purchase from, you know, a lot of times they'll go in and take all the goodies out, you know, toolkits and spares and things like that. Not that we don't have enough of them already.
Mm. Yeah, dealers do that sometimes too.
Everything is worth money and people know
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Oh, do you find that sometimes people take out those easily remove items? Like the leather tool roll from like the...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, some of that stuff is so valuable now anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's just... Yeah.
Well, so easy to take and so valuable, yeah.
Yeah, the earlier the cars, the harder it is to come by. I mean, pretty much everything. You know, it's just as you go down the series, I mean, we could even be talking 356s. A toolkit on a 356 can be $10,000-$20,000.
Absolutely. You see those. Yeah, you see those on the auction sites these days. They command, you know, tremendous money for them if it's complete and it's in good shape.
If they have all those little parts, it makes a huge difference.
Exactly.
The original. So they try to make sure that they're curating those items as well to make it complete to get that dollar.
Wow.
What's the most valuable car you've ever seen? Like, if you had anything really rare come through, like a Carrera RS or something that maybe 20 years ago was still sort of a regular car, you know?
We took apart a GT.
Yeah.
We owned one personally, and then we took
one
apart.
A Carrera GT.
We've had an RSR. We've had GT2s. We had a personal cup car. I took apart a cup car. I'm trying to think. I mean, almost everything on the spectrum.
Well, let's rewind. You have a GT.
I don't now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes, I've let go of that now.
Talk to me about that.
Silver my late husband was a big exotic collector.
Okay.
He loved to have a whole mess of. I mean, I could never count even how many cars I've had in my life. But after he passed, I had no interest in maintaining a fleet of exotics, and I still have enough collecting dust in my house.
That's a full time job, I suppose.
He had a Carrera GT.
We had a GT, and then we took one apart. I believe it's only been one.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, what was the frame damage or something? Was that, I mean, what point do you take a career? It can't be fixed.
Yeah, it's, well, even if it's funny, do you remember the one that happened in New York?
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. The Gambala or Gambala,
however it's pronounced, right? Yeah. The one at 16 or whatever, 28 or whatever.
The blue one, yeah.
Yeah, everybody kept messaging me, you're going to take that one apart,
you
know?
No kidding.
And I'm like, no, because you have to, in a business sense, you have to think, you know, you talked earlier about, like, do I see them as a commodity?
Yeah.
And yes, that's all you can do as a business is, it's basically widgets.
Yep.
So there's a certain amount of widgets on that car. And if, let's say, I look at that one-off Gumball, even though technically it's not one, how many people are going to need those exact parts? Yes. Mm-hmm. So the bulk of that Carrera GT, first of all, how many are out there? How many are crashing? Mm-hmm. How many are going to be looking at me for parts specifically for that car? Mm-hmm. You know, how many, you know, when the insurance company totaled out? So there's all kinds of factors that you go into when you get into the higher end exotics. Mm-hmm. So when you get into like the base models, the C2s, the C4s, maybe even turbos, they're much more, I don't want to say run of the mill because that's too average sounding, but those are easily turnable things because everybody needs them. But when you get into that specialty, it's you know, then you have to wait for those clients, and then that's real estate that you're taking up.
That's So you might eventually find the great customer, but it takes 2 years, and it's taking up space away from something that would be much easier to turn around and get sold out easier, right?
And you can put whatever dollar you want on those parts because who else is going to have
them? That's right. You have the only ones.
But it's an investment.
A gamble. It's a risk a little bit to have it, like you said, sit here for that long, hoping that you do find the person that needs it.
Well, you are in LA. You mentioned a famous car. I'm sure you have lots of famous clients as well.
We've had random ones that come by, even drop off parts. You know,
no kidding.
We've bought a lot of famous cars. We've had a lot of famous clients. Yeah.
And you ship all over the world.
We do.
Yeah.
Because this must be, I was thinking this the other day, this must be one of the largest markets for Porsche as like a single, metro area.
I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, if you look on Porsche's schematic of where they're selling the most cars, I mean, China has been growing up the list, and I forget exactly what the categories are, but in terms of, I'd say the enthusiasm, I mean, LA is pretty much the Mecca. Other cities have a great, so Florida has a great market. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to call it a market, but a community. Yeah. And then New York has a great one. But when you visit these cities, you don't see it like you do here. Here, I mean, everywhere you go, there's 50 Porsches around you in a couple mile radius.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, whereas the other ones, they might be hibernating, especially during months of the year. Dubai is the only other place that I've seen just masses and masses of exotics all at once all the time.
Okay. People drive them here. I mean, we're seeing vintage Aircodes 356 is street parked. I mean, you don't see that in Denver.
You should have gone to the Phoenix Club on Sunday.
Yeah.
You've seen a plethora of 356. Everyone you could have wanted.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
No, our head's been on a swivel since we've been here. And we live in Denver. Denver's not bad. I'm from outside of Boston originally. You're talking about, where I think there's plenty of cars owned there, but they're in a garage.
The culture's there. Yeah.
Well, they're in the garage for three quarters of the year.
Needs to pull them out.
But here in LA, you can daily drive a convertible 911. That's no big deal, you know.
Right.
And so you see it more. It's like that's just out driving in the wild, so to speak. So.
Well, and we have the stack of events every weekend. They're all toppled on top of each other, and it's a lot of them are very Porsche heavy. Mm-hmm. So it encourages people to get out.
Mm-hmm. You're a busy woman. I see you around at a lot of events and things.
I don't even post 1% of what I do.
I believe it. I mean, what's your favorite event, or what's the one event that you would say is the must do in the Porsche world?
Oh, well, if I had to sort my list, Goodwood I've been to once, and that was a pretty incredible experience. I call it a car show like on drugs almost. I mean, that was every make is just, you know, one had like a roller coaster around the building, and that was so much fun.
Was this the revival or the
I haven't been to Revival. Okay. No, this was the Festival of Speed. Probably 2019, I think it was.
Oh, cool.
Excellent.
I do want to go to Revival, which just happened, and do the period costume and all that.
Mm.
I go every year to Amelia and to Pebble. Those are great shows. LA has a million great shows. I just got back from Lufkekold in Indianapolis. The Porsche Sports Car Together Festival, which is a tongue twister. Red Sport Reunion, obviously, is always you know, but we haven't had it for a little while, so it's like not on the top of my radar, but I heard potentially, I don't even know if it's going to be Easter. I think it's going to be 2023.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me about Indianapolis. I grew up in Indianapolis, of all places.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Indy 500's ingrained. Is this the first year they'll have it there? Will this be a regular thing? Or was this sort of a one-off? Or someone told me they're going to open maybe an experience center. or at the Indy 500 track. I don't know if that's true. Did that have anything to do with it? Or
well, I can't brand myself as a Porsche spokesperson.
Okay, well, of course, level, yeah, yeah.
But, you know,
well, how about this? How was the show?
You looked like you were having fun. I watched the video.
It was a fabulous place. I think I had only been to Indianapolis one other time on my way to go to Porsche Parade in French Lick a couple years ago. That was probably 2016, I'd say, maybe even 15. And briefly went through the town. I don't even know if I went to the racetrack at the time, and then kind of was on my way. But this time I really got to see Indianapolis. And it's a great city.
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised. I saw your video of that area, the bottling part of, what do they call that?
It was
the bottling
amazing.
District or
yes.
something? That
the
was just run down when I was there. So that was great to see.
Okay, so then you saw the revival of it. And it made it look so glamorous. And now I understood why the Coca-Cola picked that location because they're all about this artistic backdrops. You know, and it just, that whole vintage feel it was incredible.
Very Instagrammable.
Yes, exactly. Not, don't look at mine because I do not have a creative mind.
Well, they have,
I like to repost others.
They have, the cars are curated so well, but also you're right, the location is always kind of it's kind of a nice surprise reveal when they decide where they're going to do it.
And they keep it very secret.
It's kind of like this big top secret project until they're ready to kind of unveil it, but. Did you go to the one, I think it was maybe two events ago, where it was at the Lumberyard?
Two ago. I did not go to that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was 2018, I think that would have been.
I think,
We were just at the Peterson. It was your first time to there.
Both of us,
you know. I mean, I always knew the Peterson is where, like, Biggie was assassinated, so I was going to pour one out.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, apparently after MTV Awards or something, right?
Right,
there was an after party.
Right, and at that intersection. Right,
what is that?
Fairfax.
Oh, not in
Fairfax
the Peterson. And, okay,
no.
But right out front.
Outside of it.
But if you Wikipedia this, it says location of death, the Peterson, but I think it technically happened on the street or the sidewalk, right? If I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But fantastic place. We did the vault tour and all that.
Okay.
And then they had the
Lift Gold exhibit. Is there? Oh, Lift Gold is still there.
Yes, this is five or six.
I wasn't sure when they were going to be.
Yeah, so we got the whole package, and we went from the vault right into this sort of secret room right off of that, where they have all the 956 and 962 race cars, all the Le Mans endurance racing.
Oh, that's
cars.
Right, because it's the
prototypes.
Race series.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them
was
still on the Lumber. That's why.
Yeah,
I
that's
asked.
What
one
I think.
It had been taken off.
A couple
in
of
that
them looked
time,
like it looked like it was still on like the same exact pallet of wood it might have been at Lufticult. So, or maybe they were just mimicking that. I don't know. Incredible display. So
the was it the Colorado Grand, right? And Colorado just went through, and there were a lot of road-worthy Porsche race cars that came through. And we weren't around. I missed it. But, for a week, people's Instagrams were heating up with these amazing pictures, you know, of these race cars. It's one thing to see them in a museum, and as amazing as the Peterson is, it's another thing to see these things on the road, for sure. Yeah. Speaking of, what are you driving? We saw you in a Cayenne.
Yes.
Saw your sticker on the back, so we knew it was you. What's your daily? What do you like to drive?
Well,
what car makes you smile?
My Cayenne is definitely my daily now. I purchased it with a blown engine, and then I rebuilt the engine. So that is definitely now my daily. I'd given up my Range Rover, which was my temporary until my...
That engine didn't blow up, though, huh?
That's, no, okay. That one's still going. It's for sale.
Yeah, right on.
I have a couple Hummers at home. I have a hard top and a soft top.
H1s.
I need to do little fixes. And then, my kids love to hang on to those. So someday I might let them go. We'll see.
What investment those have turned out to be, huh?
I mean, they pretty much held their value for a long time. Yeah. And, you know, now they have that new electric, you know, H1 that's come out. So I saw that at Amelia. It's an interesting twist. I mean, you know, the Bronco, all these cars are making new cars.
Yeah.
Then my 997, I just tore apart because someone needed the engine. I literally rebuilt the engine, and someone needed. I drove it up to Pebble and came home, and 2 days later, someone needed the engine. So
I guess that's the business you're in, right?
I had a Boxster before that, same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
IMS on that one? Or?
No.
Okay.
Someone. Well, I don't know what the issue was there. I don't remember. But that's just a very typical thing. I just, you know, I mean, we used to. I've had times where I buy personal cars to keep for a while. I had a GT. That I purchased, was going to put together, sold that, you know, sometimes it's just easier to turn them to make a project for yourself. You know, I try not to be too selfish about what I and then I have my Speedball, which is, it was written up in Excellence Magazine.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And it's a pretty special car. It's an Outlaw
quite
a long time ago, and it's got a 93 Turbo S engine in it, but because I let it sit. Now all the engine, the seals all need to be redone. So that's another process of love.
I saw a picture too of you with Magnus Walker online, right?
So, he's like a cool guy. He called me the other day and he says, "What size shoe are you?" And I told him. And he's like, "Come pick up your shoes." Because she's making these Nike shoes now.
Oh, that's right.
And I still haven't gotten my butt downtown. I go get them.
Oh, so but he's got one earmarked for you.
Yeah.
Oh, those are
he's
great.
He's a great guy.
Yeah,
he seems
awesome.
That'd be
he's
a fun
got,
place to
he's
tour
got
the next
too,
day
yeah,
when
yeah.
we're here for sure. But well, you mentioned electric. You hinted at electric or teased electric. We talked a little bit before we hit the record button here. And you said so far your industry hasn't really been too affected by this electrification push. I mean, you probably have a long half-life yet with the IC engines and all that. But how are your customers changing? What are they just always asking for something newer and newer? Or the trends in the parts business change? You mentioned the 997. I said the IMS. I'm a former owner of a 997 that fortunately never blew up. Is that the issue everyone has made it out to be? I mean, you would know, right? You see people coming and buying engines, replacement engines. And
it's common conversations.
Are you tired of talking about it?
No, not at all. Okay. No, there were definitely issues with some of them.
Okay.
There were definitely not issues with others.
Was there a common thread?
I won't get into all the details of which ones and the cutoffs and so forth, but The most typical, if you're going to have IMS issues, you're going to have it typically around-ish, we'll say the 50,000 mark, 40 to 60, you know, approximately. You'll hear some knocking, typically get some smoking. I mean, there's definitely some significant signs of that. But most of the cars now, because that era has been so long past now, I mean,
there's still some, like, new cars.
The miles on most of those cars have passed those significant stages. And there's been fixes, and a lot of people have done upgrades. I do think that sometimes people thought that they needed an IMS upgrade and they didn't necessarily. Yeah. But, you know, like if you're getting in there and you're getting a clutch done, you know, let's go ahead and do it. And okay. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you've got 100,000 miles, you're not going to need to do it because you've passed that.
Yeah, interesting.
Kind of point of no return.
Yeah, you're out of that danger. You're into maybe other dangers at that point. But the IMS.
All these things will run forever, right? Yeah. With a place like this, right?
You know, well, the old Porsches can if you treat them really well and you get it maintained and you're really watching everything. They can hundreds of thousands of miles. Yeah. Those cars can go.
Well, and I need to hear that because I'm the kind of I've had my current car for a year. I've put like 2,400 miles on it. You know, I gotta drive it more. I know that's worse for it than driving it, isn't it? It's
I wanted to ask a question that you mentioned before, but maybe we'll take a quick break right now and we'll kind of go into that.
We'll come back we'll be back.
Okay.
Okay, it's the steering committee. We're back with Sarah DeCarmen here at LA Dismantler in Sun Valley in LA and having a great conversation. We were talking a little bit here about our Goodr sunglasses, and we'll get to them in a minute, but just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Swiss Trax. Use the code STEER15 at checkout, and you'll get 15% off any order. So, Goodr.
Yeah.
And, you weren't familiar with this brand, but they're pretty cool, aren't they?
We're spreading the love right now as we speak. So, Goodr. Website's at goodr.com, and they make these no slip, no bounce, polarized sunglasses. Great for running, triathlons, golf, but also just great for driving. Right. I use them every day. Use steering 15. Right. So that's steering, ING at the end, 15 at checkout, and you'll get 15% off your order. But I've provided Sarah here with a selection here, so I'm waiting to see which one she decides she'd like.
The one with the giant tongue on the front.
I think that's perfect.
From the Rolling Stone line. The Exile on Main Street.
You were down at Goodr at the home office this morning.
Yeah, they call it the Lagoon.
The Lagoon. Explain to me why that's the Lagoon. Well, that seems ominous or something.
Well, Carl the Flamingo is their mascot.
Okay.
So everything is the Lagoon. Tomorrow I'm going to go over to the Cabana, which is their, they have a pop-up store. I'm going to go check that out tomorrow. But
excellent.
Check them out, goodr.com.
And I want to give a shout out, of course, to our first and still sponsor, Brews Beers, right? Yeah. Because what car, podcast doesn't need a beer sponsor?
So I get to sample the glasses, but not the beer? Like, hello?
That's a little harder to fly with, unfortunately.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's definitely,
that's right. We should give out your URL here at LA Dismantler. It's just LADismantler.com.
LADismantler.com.
Right? Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Easy.
@ LA Dismantler on social.
Are you open to the public? You do most of your business online?
Oh, we definitely, we ship around the world, so we got a lot of emails and phone calls and social media requests, and I try to funnel them all so the team can answer. I was funny because I was driving over here and we, you and I had connected on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I was saying, God, if he messaged me on LinkedIn, I'm so far behind. I won't even see it. You know, I get in these moods where I'm like Miss Messenger and I send out and then I'm like, oh my gosh, there's all, now I have to reply to 50,000 emails. Mm-hmm. So I'm big on social and, that was a new thing for me about 4 years ago. I really, I was very quiet and I mm-hmm. had what I call stalker accounts, meaning I didn't post anything and I just kind of like barely watched. And mm-hmm. then I got pretty heavily invested. I had no idea what I was doing. And it's it's a lot of time and energy.
Yeah, but it translates into dollars, obviously.
It does.
Right?
Well, I mean, notoriety, yes. Yeah. You know, I mean, public awareness, but connection. You know, I never really understood that back when Facebook was like the big thing mm-hmm. and people were connecting with their high school, you know, so-and-so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't need to do that. I've got enough of a social circle, but connecting to Porsche people was so easy. And mm-hmm. then there's these groups and you go in there and there's mm-hmm. thousands of people and, mm-hmm. you know, then you start connecting with them and then I get to meet them all over the world, which is, that has just been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And my home base here in LA, I have a great group that I drive with every single weekend. Literally, I have a SoCal group out of my port, what I call Porsche People Global, which is my big group. And we literally drive every week and I post a list of everything that's going on. I try to curate all the events and then we'll kind of focus on one or two and some groups will go one place and some will go another. And then I called it a pair van because it's a Porsche caravan.
We like that term.
We might bring that back. I feel like I need to like coin that or like copyright it.
We'll do whatever we say. We'll say shout out. So shout out.
Well, I try to like we're having a spooky Halloween adventure, but it's a Palloween adventure because change the P. You know, I do all kinds of silly stuff like that. Yes.
Well, I actually showed your picture. I have a daughter who'll be 9, Ilsa. She is a tall blonde who isn't into cars and
not yet.
That's kind of what I'm hoping. So I'm like, here's a role model for you.
Give her some candy, you know, a donut, cars and coffee.
Because I think, I mean, there is a place. I mean, maybe that's been an advantage for you, right? It is very much a male-dominated, right? Yeah. I mean, you tell me.
There's no question behind that. No, it is a male-dominated space.
Yeah.
And when my husband was a big force in it, and he was very well-known, mm-hmm. and after he passed, I just kind of went like, oh my God, how are people going to know who I am, what I am, mm-hmm. what I know, what I don't know. And I will never claim to know more than I know. I'm not an expert in any capacity. I rely on a lot of amazing people. I have such amazing connections that almost any question I ever want answered, I can answer. And then I, you know, curated a lot of knowledge, you know, over the past 20 something years. But, you know, I don't get down and get my hands greasy. I hire people for that.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna fake pretend on put on overalls unless I'm playing around. Yeah. But so it's you know, being a, you know, 6 foot blonde with no heels and then I'm 6'5" when I throw on my, you know, my platform stilettos. I definitely get noticed, but I'm also an introvert. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know it mm-hmm. meeting me, but it takes a lot for me to be public. And so when I go to events, it's like by the end, I am maxed and I am done.
I understand.
So mm-hmm. being that I kind of stand out in a mm-hmm. field, I'm really recognizable and people come up to me, which is much easier than me trying to go up and remember because I get ADD brain.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember who did what, when, hair.
I bet you remember the cars.
I'm like, I think I know you, and I don't.
I know that feeling of like, I'm so sorry. I know we've been introduced 3 times. So can you just give me your name one more time?
But I remember what you drive. Yeah. That's what I always remember.
That's the thing.
You're the one with the 996 GT3.
I can't remember your name at all, but I can tell you what year your car is, though.
Right.
Yeah, that's us. That's our problems. Yeah. But I had a specific question about something you mentioned, kind of hinted at before. You said a lot of people lately are buying chassis. There's a great demand for chassis.
Mm-hmm. Builders.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Do you find it's people who are looking to kind of just, they want to build like their kind of ideal, like Porsche hot rod, like from the ground up, like, you know, with like a 80s 911, but with like, you know, all new drivetrains in it or something.
Or is it like Singer and Magnus? Is that who's driving
I never
that?
Thought about that. Yeah. Is it?
Are there any 964s left unmolested?
Well, so we've been selling builders, I'll call them rolling chassis, you know, shells, whatever you want to title them to be. Our entire existence, but it just recently there's just been such a demand for them. So almost all of the kind of outlaw company, a Singer, literally we throw stone in there around the corner. Rod Emery is just a little bit over that way. You know what I mean? Their Gunther Works is just down in Orange County. So they're all kind of here. Roof, you know, has been a client forever. they you know, all of these companies have continued to give this life and love to the outlaw renegades. You know, I mean, I could get into a whole discussion about what people are putting in instead of Porsche engines. I'm like, no, yeah, I'm kidding. Yeah, but that's okay because there's only so many to go around. You know, if you think about all the ones out there and the ones that even I have to, in my small little world, even the ones that I have to take out, you know, not all of them are good anymore. And so sometimes, you know, there's not enough engines to go around and they're putting, mm-hmm. they're subbing in, whether it's an electric engine or an LS engine or all these other crazy mm-hmm. concoctions. And in terms of trending, sometimes the client is upfront about what his project is going to be. And sometimes they want to bring it back to spec. Sometimes it's, you know, a father-son, father-daughter project. It's really all over the map, you know, of what people want to do. Sometimes they want to make an outlaw. They want to have an air cooler, but they want to put some really kind of more modern things into it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a race car they want to build. Sometimes mm-hmm. they want to, you know, they want a bare chassis because they're just going to keep it so stripped out, you mm-hmm. know, to avoid the weight.
Like a track car type thing. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so basically that whole gamut of things.
It's all over the place, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so I guess there's still a lot of probably like, COVID-driven projects, you know, like time on my hands. Yes. I want to kind of do this now while I can.
Well, I don't know if they have the time, though. That's what I find interesting.
Well, they
think
they have the money, though, right?
They definitely think they have the time.
PPP loans paid off. No idea.
Well, and then that's their problem once they have it, right? They can deal with it on the other end. So you just help them get to that first step. So.
And I would love if I could always stay invested in people's projects once they leave here. So mm-hmm. there's some that I do. Auto Amateur is one that I have been, you know, I kind of, you know, we really kind of friended with each other. And then I just saw him in Indianapolis. So it's exciting when I always say, you know, please tag me because once it leaves here, I don't really know what's going to happen to it. I my brain can't track who did what, where, when. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's fun to see. And sometimes I'll go to a show and I just went to what's called Sunset GT, which is one of the biggest exotic shows in Los Angeles. And there's this guy named Renison Sherritt and his wife. And here I am, you know, again, I get a little, I call my blonde moments, you know, I'm walking through and I'm doing a live feed of the show and there's these two stunning cars. Bright purple, bright pink. I was like, oh my God, this color scheme is amazing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm filming it and I come back and then I wanted to take pictures in front of it. And that guy comes up to me and I'm looking, I'm like, I know him, you know? And he says, yeah, I got these cars for me and I got these parts for you. And I got, you know, and he was explaining his whole, and then I did a live feed, which unfortunately I posted on Instagram and it made the coloring all weird. I don't know why sometimes you post and it's like strips like, mm-hmm. so it really, I was kind of disappointed that I didn't, and I should have reposted it, but having him explain, and he really custom made this project, then he built one for his wife. So to feel like you were part of something from the start all the way to the end, you know, we've helped Magnus with cars.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I don't know, it's endearing when someone kind of attributes something that they have made, you know, poured their love into and you were a part of that. So absolutely. I like when people include me on their projects.
That's very cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that seems great to have maybe like a Porsche come in that's been damaged. It might think it's at the end of its life. And then, like you said, somehow it goes back into the circulation and then
one
it becomes
trash
this.
Is another
and then it becomes this other, you know, this great new beautiful thing, like you said, that's out there now and inspiring other people. So that's great. Yeah.
Oh, and even getting back to, because I was talking about how sometimes people come here. I mean, I've literally had people have flown around the world just to come and see us. And so some people cry. We started this conversation earlier when they enter. And some people realize what I see is that these are all possibilities.
Yep.
So I can't control and no one else can control what happened to the end of life of these cars. But it doesn't mean it's the end of the life necessarily. It just means it could be the start of a new life or it could be that, you know, that part, that car right there could 100 pieces could go to 100 different cars and therefore
and
make
keep 100
all of them
other cars
again.
Yeah, working
so
again. Yeah.
I try to always wrap my brain around that and try to kind of, you know, enlighten people of that. So, you know, instead of looking at it from a sad eye, you go, oh, wow, possibilities.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. The cars live on, right?
Yes.
One thing I noticed, you do have like a, what looks like kind of a photo booth sort of area set up down there for smaller parts. Is that?
Our eBay section, yes, which it needs some love.
Okay. Well, but
hiring staff right now is a challenge, I have to say. The
I've heard that a little bit. A little hard.
I have to laugh. I came in here. I said, I'm here for an interview with Sarah. And they said, oh, what are you applying for?
Yeah, they were ready to give him a job. They were ready to put him right to work as soon as he came in.
What are you hiring for? I don't know. Maybe we can work something out.
How did you feel in your hometown?
I go back and forth if you want to know the truth. It's pretty nice out here. So,
But with the eBay section there, though, do you know that there are certain parts where it's like, that's an easy one to pull off and just put right up on eBay?
As opposed definitely. To,
yeah.
But I mean, the easiest thing to sell on eBay is also the easiest things to sell in-house. Yeah. You know, I mean, your the typical most requested parts are always going to be your headlights, your taillights, your bumpers, because that's where light impacts are going to happen.
Yep. You know,
and then I could get into all kinds of other things that, that break down.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so but yeah, so besides mechanical things, like you said, the kind of the things on the outside that'll get damaged in those small hits, those small little bumps and things like that.
Everything has a need. It's just, you know, how many are listed? That's a big thing. So if I'm going to list a part and there's 50 others competing against it, unless I want to price myself really kind of, you know, lower to the bottom. Because I would say, we talked about market value before. I will never compete against a garage seller. If you've got extra parts in your thing and you just want to get a few bucks for them, I can't compete against them. You don't have my overhead. I'm in LA. I have the most expensive overhead about, you know, from all of my competitors. And that's a challenge because I can't just say, oh, I'm going to be more expensive because I've higher overhead. Nobody cares. You know, so it's nice being central and having access to this market and people can walk in, which other competitors of mine don't have that advantage. But yeah, no, it is a challenge always to try to have that fine line. So I compete against, you know, other people like me, other dismantlers and so forth.
Excellent. I know that we could talk to you for two more hours, but well, it's not unfortunate, but we do have to leave here shortly because we've got another another meeting after you. But I want to ask it, leave with one final question. I guess if you weren't a Porsche person, what would you be? What would you be driving? What would be your second mark as far as the passion?
Okay, so that was another double question.
I'm sorry, I got to get better at this.
If
it wasn't Porsche, what would be the car?
Oh, if there were no Porsches on the market, I do still like Ferraris if I'm going to think exotic. I do actually like my Range Rover. I love my Hummers, but they're not dailies, definitely. What else? I love a convertible. So, yeah.
So anything nice and big and glamorous convertible, like a Mercedes SL or something
and,
like
I mean,
that.
And we had Lamborghinis, we had McLarens, we had all of them. And I wasn't really as drawn, but now it's funny. So I'm dating he was a Porsche dealer until 3 weeks ago, and now he is at O'Gara, and so he's in the exotic world because it's the biggest Lamborghini dealership, and so I'm like, I need to really, continue to see some love for exotic. I was a Bentley girl forever, too.
Oh, no
I
kidding.
I do love Bentleys.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, and he's so funny. He gets his pick of the litter, and so he brought the top of the line Bentley the other day, top of the line Rolls Royce. So I'm very spoiled with what I get rolled around in.
I like I consider myself a Bentley boy these days. I really like I like Porsches and I like Bentleys and I like some of the new, like the latest Continental GT. But then also I really like the old, like, 1920s, locomotive style, like those. That really.
Those long drop top where there's the back seat and there's like a tray. I mean, you were driven.
Yeah. It's like a small locomotive. Yeah.
Right?
And it's, for considering it only carries four people in it. It's, I love
it. Although it doesn't seem very easy. I think everything in terms of parts and service and all that.
I look at that. I'm like,
sending it across the country.
Everything has to be fabricated on that to fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I wish we could talk to you for two more hours. We planned way too much for this trip.
We're trying to squeeze.
Did we see a Pepperdine diploma?
I am a Pepperdine grad.
We just were near the
waves.
Nice. We're just near the campus. We went up to the Malibu Cars and Coffee.
So that was something we did. Good turnout.
We were there. I think we were there a little early, and we talked to some of the locals.
It is one of the later ones.
Yeah.
10-ish.
We did see Spike Ferriston come the other way and his Zagato, which was kind of cool. He was sitting up,
if you wait long enough, Jay is almost always there every weekend.
We'll be back for sure. And I'd love to come back and talk with you, too. I know Dougie would. Too. So hopefully you'll have us again.
I was going
to
say,
Right.
I feel like we didn't even get a tour. I feel terrible. I wish we had more time to spend with you. But Sarah DeCarmen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, LADismantler.com.
Yeah, and if she's your source for Porsche parts from what you said, 1970 up to the present, come check with her first. She might have it, and she probably does. Yeah. So it's probably right out here in this in the warehouse. Yeah.
Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I'm always saying I'm very honored that you've wanted to have a few minutes of my time.
Excellent. Well, we hope to talk with you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.